Welcome to the Startup Dentist Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trutter. After over 800 plus successful dental startups, I'm here to share everything I know about starting a profitable and purposeful dental practice with you. In each episode, we get right to the core of what it takes to launch and grow a successful dental practice. So whether you've just started researching dental startups or you've been sitting on the fence for a while, this podcast is your personal roadmap to your very own dental practice. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the Startup Dentist Podcast. Great to be here again. And if you are an associate dentist that's thinking about opening up your own practice, and one of the big concerns in today's environment is lending. Can you get the necessary funding? What's going to happen with your student loans? What do I need to do with my student loans to put myself in the right position? What are banks looking for? And, or if you're that person says, I have lots of student loans, can I get financing? Then check out my most recent episode where I dive into the world of lending. And I spent over a decade in that industry. And so I could tell you the ins and outs of what's happening there and how to best prepare yourself for the necessary financing for your startup. Today, I have a special guest on today's episode. And when I talked about this, I wanted to share a story about a dentist who has opened a practice, has thrived in one of the most competitive markets, and has just a great story of perseverance and like strategy in terms of getting patients. So go grab your notebook and let's make this dream practice of yours a living and breathing reality. All right, folks, I have a very special guest here today. The story that I want to start off with is this. This doctor has opened up a practice, and when everyone talks about like startup practices, most people will say it's too tough. It's too competitive. There's a lot of dentists. But let me tell you the story. She opened up in Manhattan. And if no one knows what's happened in the last few years with COVID and everything like that, it's been a tough few years, especially in areas like New York. And she has thrived so much. And I want to share her story because she also has just a great story of perseverance, but more importantly, how she's been able to grow her practice successfully, how she's been able to connect within her community, which is such a big part of her, the DNA and the culture of her practice. So with me today is Dr. Aarthi Jagirdar. So hey, Dr. Aarthi, how are you?
Thank you for having me. That was like the perfect pronunciation.
You know, I was rehearsing it before this morning over and over again. So, so Aarthi is, she is the owner of Flatiron Dental in Flatiron District of New York. And tell our audience, if you would, like, give us a little background, like how did you arrive at choosing a startup? Give us a little background about like, what is Flatiron Dental known for even early on? So that's kind of a two-part question, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I always knew that I wanted my own practice. I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. The timing worked out for our family where I wanted to spend a lot of time with my kids when they were younger. So I embarked on this journey when my kids were kind of preschool age, and the timeline gets a little mixed up because of COVID, but we are where we are. I had looked at practices for sale in New York, and it's not so dissimilar from other places. I think one of the big factors in New York is how committed will that patient population be to a new doctor when it's a saturated environment. So you're looking at these valuations, and it's like, okay, if it's a $1 million practice and they want $1.3 million for it, and there's people coming in with cash even, so you're necessarily a competitive buyer. And I'm like, well, what are you buying? You're buying old equipment. You're going to have staff who thinks that you're a kid, maybe, that has habits that maybe you don't want. For me, I wanted to practice dentistry in a very comprehensive, thoughtful way. So also retraining patients is not something I was interested in doing where they're going to feel like, well, my last doctor didn't, and I think a lot of people who have bought existing practices can attest to that. And listen, buying a practice works for a lot of people. To me, I'm like, let me spend $700,000-$800,000 and make it exactly the way that I want to make it. And while I won't have cash flow on day one, I have been an associate in New York City for over a decade. So I had a core group of patients and, you know, pretty much since we opened have been able to cover our overhead, made a profit in month six. I know we'll talk about it a little bit more, but month six, $14,000 profit. I was like, going to get a hygienist, going to spend a little bit on marketing. Hadn't really done marketing. And I found out I had breast cancer. So, yes. You know, it's this like a contraction in the business. And even though it was just, I went down to a skeleton staff, talked to all my vendors, figured out how to get super, super lean. And as the months went on, there were months where we couldn't accommodate new patients. I worked through chemotherapy. I worked through radiation. Yep. You know, in December, the practice had done $154,000. And that was, I gave the whole team a paid week for Christmas. And so even despite how difficult those circumstances were, without any kind of external marketing, the message is landing with patients and with my team. Yep. People will talk about how difficult it is to hire great team members. Great team members have found me and have asked to join the practice. So I'm very thoughtful about, you know, what it means to be a good leader, what it means to create a culture, to show appreciation. As a startup practice owner, you get to do more of that, like create that from the very beginning and be really thoughtful about it.
Yeah. And I think you have an abundance mindset, and just to kind of pick on a lot of dentists out there, like, there is a scarcity mindset that happens so many times, and I've seen it time and time again in 20 years of doing this, is that there is a scarcity mindset of like, can I get patients? How do I get, I don't know if I can get the right people. And you just looked at it from more of an abundance mindset, which is, I know how to do it. And I think there is that jumping in feet first. Yes, you went through a lot of traumatic elements, you know, on a personal level, but like for you to come out of it, I think you just, I love your attitude towards it, because it was, everything was an opportunity, and looking at those opportunities and knowing that if you don't take the opportunity, you never know. And that's, I think that's the biggest part, is like, this is a startup. You need to put all your effort into it and really make that investment of time and effort and financially in order to get there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the way that Ideal resonates with me. I think that the aspect of give is what brought me to you. That was something that I had developed kind of on my own, and I didn't find another partner who understood the language of we will be successful and what are we going to do with our success. So even beyond the abundance, it's like, not only will we be abundant, but we'll be so abundant that we get to make a big difference in other people's lives.
Yes.
And that really fuels me. You know, I'm willing to take a stand for what I believe in, because I believe that my success will lead to the betterment of society in my own ways. You know, what we can do as dentists for people is very powerful. I think the abundance mindset comes from partially, I mean, you got to train yourself, right? It's human nature to look for danger. That's what kept our ancestors millennia ago alive. We're not in danger anymore. Right. And it takes so little. Like, once you get going, it doesn't take that much to cover your overhead. Stay lean. You start doing some Invisalign. You start doing some crowns. You build value for comprehensive dentistry. And soon enough, it's like, oh, I did two crowns. I can cover payroll for the week, honestly. Like, it starts to be easier once you've reached all of your fixed costs. And then it just is like exponential from there. So, I grew up, you know, in a very entrepreneurial family, like I said, the child of immigrants. So I'm sure I'm genetically programmed, nature and nurture programmed, to be a special kind of feisty and resilient. And I saw it firsthand, and I wanted to take this on to show my kids, like, this is how you get in there and you create jobs and you take good care of people and you do things the right way. And it's very rewarding. I'm hosting my son's kindergarten class for their field trip on Tuesday.
Yes.
And, you know, he's very proud, and the kids are excited and the parents are excited. And so I think as dentists, we have such an opportunity to create very close relationships with our patients, with our community. What we do matters. I mentor students and I'll tell them, like, listen, social media is not real. I'm on social media, but it's not, I don't market on there. I know a lot of people do well on there. Nothing against social media. My point really is that what we do matters in the real world. Your patients will know how you made them feel, how their smile looks, how their smile feels. You know, if it lasts, like, your dentistry has to be good. You have to treat people well. And that one person turns into two people, and those two people turn into four people. And you get to a point where you're like, I can only accommodate people who come from a close referral. Like, that's kind of where we're getting to. And I had the intuition that New York City needed more of a very good practice that was based in health, in prevention, and I do full mouth rehabilitation. I do full mouth veneers. All of my full mouth cases are either replacement or patients who tried Invisalign and tried whitening and it just was not it, or that have a job where they can't go through Invisalign. But I share this to say, I think that there's a lot of sort of like mystique around what's a fancy practice, and cosmetic practices seem like a fancy practice, but being like a very good, comprehensive, almost bread and butter practice is also, I would argue, oftentimes more profitable.
Yeah, 100%. And your mentality, I love it, because I think so many dentists on social media, and I beat up on a lot of social media groups, and I'm part of them, I sponsor groups, and but there's so many people that go in there, they're looking for, tell me the trick. Mm-hmm. What is the trick to being successful? There isn't a trick. And I think there isn't a magic pill. You know, I've said this on this podcast before. Like you said, you haven't heard my podcast, but you're here. So you get to hear and be a part of it. But I talk about like the Matrix, where they say the blue pill, the red pill. And it's like, people are looking for the blue pill, the red pill when it comes to marketing or getting patients through the door. And because I think a lot of people are chasing somebody else's dream, or they're chasing, like, they're thinking, oh, I have to have this kind of practice. The thing is that building value and trust within a community can happen in a place like New York, where people, like, there is no community. It's just buildings. It's like, that's BS, because I have somebody that's done it and is doing it so very well. And I think it's that mess. I love that message. And I hope we can pump this episode out, because I think that's such a refreshing outlook for associate dentists that are wanting to become practice owners. And I think it's also, and you said this, you were at our Startup Practice Blueprint course not too long ago. You talked about these small wins on a daily basis. Like you said just a minute ago, you said, okay, two crowns pays for my payroll for the week. And I think everyone, I say this to my oldest daughter, because she gets overwhelmed. We were bantering back and forth. My oldest daughter has ADHD. Yeah. I do too. And squirrel, where? There we go. And she's a great student. She gets overwhelmed because things kind of stack up on top of her. And I always ask her, well, how do you eat an elephant? I get the roll of the eyes, because she's 17 years old now. And it's like one bite at a time. And I think everyone's trying to make this huge bite. I think it's small wins on a daily basis need to be celebrated and focused on. It's not about like, how do I get from zero to $1 million? Sure, you can get there, but it's every day having small wins. It's every day making a personal connection. And what does that personal connection do to the next patient? Your business, your practice has thrived based upon referrals. Yeah. It has. You have, and you've made an inroads into your community. So if you would share some of that knowledge, if you would, of like, how have you done that? And how does your give, because I love the give, like that was essential. That's one of our three core values at Ideal Practices. That's what binds. I think that's what shows what values are in the community as a dentist, because people are going to choose. They may not know if you have the best margins, but they know what your values are. And I think that's a huge message. So if you would just share with the audience, like, hey, some of those marketing elements that you have done, because you haven't gone that traditional path. What things from a ground marketing community and that give, and how does that tie into the DNA of your practice?
Yeah. I mean, before I truly opened, I had hosted some open house events, and I'm extroverted. I love community in general. I'm very invested in all the spaces that I inhabit. So, you know, I'm a class parent this year. I'm planning a South Asian parents gathering for our K-12 school so that we can, you know, gather around our holidays and plan for our holidays next year. I know a lot of dentists in New York City. I was a mentor for the ADA for students. I love people genuinely. And so coming into it, that's a skill set that I have. Yes. And I hosted an open house for all of my friends and family. I hosted an open house for, all the professionals that I know. And I hosted one with a couple of friends of mine who are influencers. Like they know the moms in this part of New York City who have their own brands and are connected. And, you know, I didn't expect to host that event and schedule 100 patients. I hosted that event to say, here's what I made. Here's what I'm about. You know, if you need me, I'm around, no pressure. But, you know, even if you have a question for the influencer group, I offered them a free whitening. No one took me up on it. A lot of them ended up becoming my patients, but no one was like, how about that free whitening? So after that, I don't do anything. I don't say anything is free or discounted. I actually, like detracts from the brand in a way. I don't do specials. I don't do promotions. It's like people come because they value what we're doing. So I think launching with just like, hey, I exist was the first thing. Like I said, I'd been an associate in New York City for over 10 years. So I had some patients that were ready to come on, you know, and it's like, my husband made an appointment and he had a coworker who sat next to him and the coworker comes and and just
the snowball.
Yes. And slowly the word gets out there. And, you know, I would have my team, like we made little gift baskets with coffee stuff for the businesses in the neighborhood. Nothing really came of that. So I was just like, we'll see what's going to work. And really it was that core group of patients who then sent more patients. And some of my patients, they were so happy. They're like, my mom is going to come from Florida to come see you for her Invisalign and aesthetic work. Or, you know, my mom is with this other prosthodontist in New York City and I want her to, she wants to come see you because she's so happy with her teeth. So it didn't take long. Like once people start to see the work and they feel happy with the result and they're, the people around them are like, you look great. Where'd you go? They're asking, hey, are you willing to see me? And I'm like, that is the vibe. Let's keep that vibe going. The other part of this is that I've always been connected to the physicians in my life. I have a very close relationship with all the referrals that I have between dental and medical. Okay. And, you know, more and more, I think people are talking about the relationship between oral care and overall health. And so especially around inflammation, brain health, there are a lot of doctors in New York City who are thinking about longevity and optimizing for wellness. Yes. So I got to meet some of these doctors who then invite me to their networking events, and they're all private practice owners, don't take insurance at all. And it is they want a dentist who they can send their patients to, who they know will have the kind of experience that I've had here. Like I had a patient
trusted.
Yeah. And I, you know, like, listen, I call them from my cell phone. Like I had a patient who, came from one of these practices, came for the cleaning and was like, oh, it's been a few days, since the cleaning and suddenly my whole mouth hurts. And we found out it was a sinus infection, but I'm like, I'm calling that person back at 7:30 PM, you know, and I'm happy to I like that. So that level of service might not be for everybody. I do think that you can put boundaries in place if that's not exactly for you, but in a place like New York City, that's very saturated. I do think you probably have to be, you know, the kind of person that enjoys talking to people and building that value. If you're like, I just want to put out a bunch of ads and see who I see, that's probably not going to work.
Yeah. I call this internally, we like to call this a relationship of chemistry. When you talked about connecting with people and talking with people, I think so many times when there's this, I'm going to host an event, it's like, okay, or I want to go connect with people in the community. Don't talk about dentistry. Mm-mm. Be a human, not a dentist for a minute. I get it. Like dentistry is what drives it. But I think you have such great like wisdom, which like you went out and said, I'm connecting with people at a human level to bring people in. And I think most of the time there's like this, I need to go out and be a dentist in front of people. Okay. Be a dentist in your office. Go be a human outside. And what you'll find is you'll make great connections and it's that snowball effect. And so I think your message is so poignant. And I think this is awesome because I think so many people miss that opportunity of you're a human first, you're a dentist second. Go up, be a human, connect with people. You'll find that you'll make these great inroads. And it applies in New York. It applies in suburban areas. It even applies in rural areas. And I think everyone thinks if it's saturated, I got to do something else. I got to outspend people. No, sometimes you got to do things that other people aren't doing. And you need to get really freaking comfortable about getting uncomfortable when you become a practice owner. Do things that you haven't done before to be connected with in your community, and you can thrive even in a market like yours where there's buildings full of dentists, for crying out loud, not just it's not just the suburban dentist where it's like, hey, there's a few dentists on the corner. No, there's like 20 in a building. How do you separate yourself?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, when you're looking at the demographic, right? Like you, if you wanted 3,000 patients per dentist, or if it's fee for service, 300 per, right? It's like 200 dentists, patients per dentist in parts of Manhattan. So right. If patients are coming to you, they're leaving someone else. So it's like, yes. What makes you so great? I'm not open evenings. I'm not open weekends. You know, we're here 3.5 days a week. We have patients will be like, oh, you know, are you here on a Saturday? Are you here late someday? And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm with my family. So that was going into it. I'm like, this comes after my commitment to my family. And we have family Fridays. I make sure I can get to those. We have meeting for worship. It's a Quaker school every Wednesday. The whole practice starts at 10 a.m. so that I can be there. You know, I close the practice for the field trip. I chaperone the field trip. So to me, and I live on this block. So the kids will stop by and get a xylitol lollipop and head home. Or, if one of the kids is sick, they'll come and sit at my desk while our nanny goes and picks up the other one. And it's all very, to me, it's just like a cohesive life. It's one thing. When I'm out there in the world meeting people, no one wants to be sold to. It just feels kind of gross. Like I would never be like, I opened a practice. I really need patients. Come see me. Like I say it that way, but you know, people are aware like, hey, how, you know, if they're like, how's it going? I'm like, good. I'm building the office, building the practice. It's a work in progress. And they might say, actually, I need a dentist. Right. And I'm like, oh, great. Like, would love to have you. It's, you know, and I really do feel it's such an honor to care for people. I really feel that way. And people, they do want to help you. People want to support you, and it comes naturally to them, especially because I'm such a supporter of people. Like to me, if I can do something to help you, I'm going to try to do it. Yep. And it comes back to you. I don't have to ask for that support. Really. It's they're like, this is a person who gives back. How can we support her?
Yeah, that's perfect. And I think that's a great message. I think everyone's looking for, again, the marketing gimmick for this. And really, it's rooted in care. And I think if you care for one person, like you said, and then that person tells one or two people, it grows over time. So for those that are like, oh my gosh, how do I get patients in the door? Care for people.
Yeah.
Truly provide care. And I think your message, and I think to all dentists, this tying together of overall systemic health and oral health has to be talked about even more. And when you tie those two elements together, you're now making a greater connection to the patient. And it's not just about, hey, I need to repair this tooth, as opposed to, well, let's make sure that your overall health is, and then now you're caring beyond just the teeth. You're caring for the overall health of the person. And I think that is a brilliant way to continue to build a patient base.
Yeah, I think, you know, the patients that find me from like Google reviews, or they're walking by and I'm on the second floor and they're like, that looks kind of pretty. So people who come in with no context, I make sure to sit with them in the waiting room before they even go back and introduce myself and say, listen, we do things a little bit differently here. We're very thorough with the records with this first appointment. It gives me a chance to look at your jaw joints, at your sinuses, all the bone around all your teeth. We're going to take this 3D scan that lets me track if we are worried about recession or drifting. We can order anything we need from that scan. We're going to go over everything together. It'll take us, you know, maybe 15 minutes, but I just like to sit down and say, hey, here's what we're about to do and what we're about. And not everyone's ready to have a conversation at that level, right? You got to meet people where they are and build value for the levels of dentistry that are available out there. So you take that PPO-driven practice that's PPO-driven patient that's only ever been to a DSO and say to them, listen, we're going to do things pretty differently here. I had a patient who was like kind of combative recently. And I explained everything to her and I told the team, I'm like, I don't want anyone else, because I don't let anyone speak to my team in a disrespectful manner. And I'm just like, we're going to cool it right off, and explained everything to her. She was like, okay, I get it. And you know, this was a patient who didn't have occlusion on one side. On our scan, I can show her how deteriorated her condyle is, where she has no occlusion. Her jaw joint keeps trying to get these teeth together. And she was like, wow, no one has ever explained that to me before. And I was like, yeah, you know, it takes a lot to get to the point where we work in these ways and the technology that's available here. And I said to her, like, listen, you're not feeling anything. I would refer you to a TMJ specialist who's going to send you for an MRI. It's a whole thing. I think let's see how you're doing for 6 months and we'll talk about it again. You know, I'm not trying to overwhelm them, but this is a patient who was like, what do you mean you need my social security number? Why should I call MetLife? Why should I do this? Why should I do that? And I'm like, listen, we'll file your insurance for you. We do that as a courtesy.
Yeah.
Or you can pay for the visit and figure that out. And so it was just, it's like, you got to meet people where they are and just hear them and have, and like walk that path with them.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I think it's, that connection is great. And I think the personal connection of really trying to understand, and that's, you know, like I've said on multiple episodes, I've said on stage, God, I hate DSOs, but I love them because they're the greatest supplier of our clients. Yeah. And ideal practices, so many dentists come in. But I think the DSO world, that's an example of like, it's damaging the perception of dentists and dentistry for these patients, where your methodology and way you'd go about it is absolutely right. It's in a true care position, but you got to break down that barrier with some of these people because they're used to like, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to just kind of do this thing. And they think there's something being sold to them by doing this, as opposed to it's coming from a place of care and respect and helping them get to a place where they can chew better, they can live better and just have, be happier about like their overall health. So word to the wise, everyone, if you listen to this. All right. Biggest wins, biggest challenges of a startup.
Biggest wins would be creating relationships with concierge practices in New York City. You know, to have patients of like the highest socioeconomic strata, these are not patients you can market to. They come through trusted referrals. So I think that I've always just focused on the work, and the work speaks for itself, to be of service to people truly, and not, I'm not promotional about it. I just trust the process, and a reputation starts to build, and you, and to have a reputation of like, I have patients who are dentists, I have patients who are hygienists from other practices who are like, I would never go to my own practice. I know.
Awesome.
And that's, I mean, I'm sorry to that practice, but like, you get one reputation. You get one reputation. Oh. What is your reputation going to be? And where, and what kinds of doors will they open for you? And it's nice that that message is landing. Like, what a win that I'm finding the other providers, the patients who, for whom this messaging resonates. And again, it doesn't have to be so financially driven, but I have a $160,000 laser. I have CEREC printing, CBCT, two scanners. Like, it does cost a certain amount to run this kind of practice. It's not so unattainable, but you do have to be fee for service. You have to have patients who can afford that. It allows me to scale my fees for my longtime patients, for other people who honestly deserve the care and maybe can't afford it. We give things away. So why not? If you're doing great work, there's people who can really afford that and care about it, and it lets you give back more.
Love it. Love it. What's one of your biggest challenges?
Oh, cancer.
well, that was kind of, wins all the time. I mean,
And something I said at the practice blueprint course comes back to me, which I told that room full of people who are like, is it a good time? It's like, they're worried about the economy, of course. And should I wait until whatever? And I'm like, listen, you can always look back and be like, it could have been. Hindsight's always going to be 2020. There's no day like the present to start. You know, I just think you got to take that leap and have faith in your own ability to get through it. The one factor, the pill that gets you through, is that you're the person who's going to get you through it and believe in yourself. You'll figure it out. Right.
Yeah.
And it takes a level of tenaciousness. And I really believe in paying people for great advice. I know that my knowledge is limited, and I have always found the best people at what they do. And I'm happy to pay you what we pay you, because I've seen $80,000 mistakes. I've seen leases that end up costing $1 million more. You know, throughout my whole journey, like, that I was able to close my financing is because of the relationships that we've had together. And even during my cancer treatments, Liz came and ran my practice for over a week. And you guys were there to say, if you need working capital, how can we help you? You already have the relationships there. So I think that believe in yourself, keep leaning on people. If I have like a shortcut where I'm like, okay, I'm feeling stuck or overwhelmed, mm-hmm. who are three people I can call?
Yep.
And let's just get started. That's a great shortcut. Yep. So cancer is tough, right? Like, I'm not going to lie. That's very hard. I am a naturally resilient person. I don't necessarily welcome challenges, but I take them as an opportunity to grow. And so to be forced to grow in the ways that cancer forces you to grow in retrospect could be seen as a gift. I was already not a person that gets stressed out easily at all. And now I'm just like, if I lost this business tomorrow, I'd be like, we'll do it again. Things happen. You know what I mean? Like, what can you do? Like, you get through each day as best as you can, and you can't let it steal your peace.
That's right.
Let it steal your presence with your children. Like, go live your life.
I read a book. It's called, it's a woman author, and it's awesome. It's called Everything is Figure Outable. Mm-hmm. And it's a great book. So I would say plug the book. Everything is Figure Outable, which is, and I think she's from like New York. So the author. So I would say you and I have had some, you know, very colorful language conversations, and you know, it's, you know, listen, that's how we riff. And this, the book is kind of written that way. Like, get off your ass and go do stuff, and like, go work hard. And like, you're going to get kicked in the gut, get back up. You know, that's just what it is. And there's always a path. There's always a solution.
That I don't get stressed out is watch me not give a fuck. That's what I actually say. You might have to believe that.
That's okay. I don't have too many kids that listen to the Startup Dentist podcast, so it's okay. I don't edit that. So, what would you say to other associate dentists? I think you kind of hinted on that, but reflecting back on that, and I'll echo what you just said. There's never a perfect time. What's going to happen with tariffs? Who in the heck knows? Hey, does anybody remember COVID from 5 years ago? All right. Well, did we know what to do then? No, we didn't. What are interest rates going to do? I don't know. There's never this perfect opportunity to become a practice owner. It's just, you need to do it. If you've been sitting around for a year or two, like, I want to be a practice owner. Like you have to take meaningful steps. So if you reflect on like your time and speaking to other associates, what would you say based upon your experience?
So first, I think there has to be a mindset shift. I was talking to a third year Columbia dental student last week who was very discouraged. They are told DSOs are the future of dentistry. And I was like, get me in there. Like, how do I get in there? What even is happening?
We're going together. I'm flying in. I'm ready.
What is that? So, you know, I really feel for the dentist coming out today. Not only is their education the most expensive it's ever been, but the market that they're coming out to in dentistry is not one that could pay off their loans. So, like, I had a group of NYU students visit my practice, and I looked at them and I'm like, there has to be an ROI on your education. How much did you spend on it? Yep. What are you going to get back for that over the course of your lifetime? And you have to practice at a certain level to make it worth it. So I'm not saying everyone can get out there not knowing anything and build the practice of your dreams. No. DSOs, I'm not villainizing them completely. They serve a function. No. And even to my patients who come from DSOs, I'm like, listen, go get your cleaning. That's great. Like there, it's dentistry is not accessible. So if DSOs are making it accessible, sure, fine. They're taking a cut, right? So insurance companies take a cut. Shareholders take a cut. What's left for the dentist? What's left for the patients? That's a losing, just higher level.
Yes.
With all those resources, just pushing papers around. No, it's about you and it's about your patient. What do you want that to look like? And go for it. You got to be willing to really lean into it for a little while, knowing that you're going to get back the life that you want for the rest of your decades to come.
That's right. And I'll just say this on a bigger and on a smaller scale, from a microcosm, the fastest way to get out of student loan debt is become a practice owner.
Yeah.
It's not working for somebody else. It's not working for a DSO. They are not the future. Is there a future there? Yeah. But why are DSOs now selling so many practices? Like what's going on? Because at some point, like you said, there's only so much of, from a financial perspective, to go around while everyone gets their cut. And at the end of the day, patients like myself and those that you serve, we're looking for a connection with a provider because we need it. And if you have to have that connection. And I think if you have, like you said, you have one connection, you have two, you get four. Mm-hmm. And it's just slowly building that up. So Arthi, I love it.
And I would encourage everyone in any market to consider that every person wants great dentistry. if a person, if you're in a working class environment, a blue collar environment, those patients also want to feel heard and cared for. They don't want to feel like their teeth are being cut apart for money. No one wants that. And so even though you might think, well, I live in a place where people don't have a lot of money, it's like, well, their out of network benefits might be decent. They might be willing to figure out how to have a few extra $100 in the year to come see you. I think don't tell people what they are capable of doing for themselves. Give them the option to have great dentistry, even if they don't come in seeming like they might be able to afford it.
I love it. Yep. Don't judge a book by its cover. You just never know. They'll figure that out. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. My last question is, you give, what do you give to?
So I created a legal entity, Uplift Dental, and my goal has been to gift treatment to people who have suffered trauma, who have lost dentition. And the timeline of it is a bit delayed. So the first patient that we took care of is an asylum seeker from Ecuador who came here with his daughter as a single father and came in pain. It was through, I try to partner with existing nonprofits so that we can identify the individuals that need the help. And my other portion of this is education, partnering with nonprofits that reach out to young mothers, new babies, giving them the initial materials that they need to take care of their young baby's oral health. You know, I think giving people a little bit of information, saying, hey, make sure the baby doesn't fall asleep with a milk bottle in their mouth. Yep. They should learn to soothe without a bottle in their mouth, try to brush, try to get them into reading, rocking a little, hugs, whatever, but no milk in the mouth overnight, that you have to brush their teeth as soon as they have teeth. Use a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of fluoride if you can. You know, people don't know that, right? Like, you're not born knowing dental education. So I'm trying to figure out what is the impact that I can make most broadly. And I had gone to the Himalayas right out of dental school to volunteer and give dentistry to people in need. And my reflection was, they don't need us over there. You know, like, they need to access their own resources, like, and we can help them help themselves. And it's such a huge amount of resources to take a bunch of people over there for what can feel like a vanity project. Look around. There's a lot of need right here and a lot of people who deserve it right here. And to do dentistry well, I need all this stuff to do it well. I'm not going to, like, you know, we were boiling our instruments on a pressure cooker over a campfire. And I was like, I don't know that this is the right thing to do. So I would say there's a lot of people that need the help. For me, it's, I know that OHI and giving people preventative information can go a long way. A colleague of mine, she builds healthcare infrastructure for developing nations. So I've talked to her about adding water fluoridation to the country of Guyana, for instance. Taught them, it's the doctors at Mount Sinai, about SDF. There's a huge, it's the indigenous population there suffers from a huge amount of caries. They had sugar plantations come in. That's what they were colonized for. And so she's like, how do we even deal with it? I'm like, SDF. So to me, I don't know what the give will end up looking like. It has its own legal entity, and I'm partnering with more and more people where I'm like, what do I know? What skills do I have that can make a difference as broadly as possible? You know, and like, how do you take these resources and get them out as far as possible? And on the other end of it, hopefully to be able to start gifting these really large cases. My goal would be every quarter. There's veterans, domestic abuse survivors, and asylum seekers that I feel very passionate about.
Awesome. Awesome. And that's one of our, like I said, that's something that we love and what we do in third world countries. We're a partner with Hope International. So, when your doors opened, we simultaneously made the funds available for 10 micro loans. And that's what we do for every practice that opens. And that was like a great connection between you and us, was like not only the success of a practice, but like outside of the walls of the practice. And that's what I love.
I mean, I was like, I'm broke, you know, like I have debt, but I know what kind of success I see around me. And there are people who might want a second, third, fourth home or get a very fancy car. I don't want those things. I think I live in New York City. Listen, it's not a cheap life, but I know that we can have a great deal of success, and yeah. I know what I would do with my success. And that really motivates me to work hard for my vision. I stand behind my values, and why I accept platforms. If I'm asked to speak, I'll speak because I want more people to have this kind of perspective. And perhaps, yeah. you know, in the absence of this kind of perspective, another one takes hold. And I appreciate this kind of thing a bit more.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much. Well, I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your message. Thank you for your trust in the Ideal Practices team. So my takeaway for everybody is this: having a plan, executing that plan, believe in yourself, and more importantly, truly value the person that's sitting in the chair in front of you. You take really good care of them. It's not about a trick or it's about some social media posts. It's about caring for each patient truly and building that trust that will continue to grow your practice. So Dr. Arthi, thank you for being here today. Really great to see you. And I'm glad you were able to get family day in today as well. So that's awesome. We kind of both mentioned this course, Startup Practice Blueprint. So if you're an associate dentist, we do this course twice a year. It is awesome. Anywhere between 20, 30, 40 dentists, associate dentists are there. If you want to sit in a room with colleagues like yourself, you want to hear stories about like Dr. Arthi and other dentists have gone through the startup process, then visit startuppracticeblueprint.com and register for our next course. That is a wrap today. Arthi, thank you for being here. Don't forget to check the show notes for any and all links and resources that we talked about today. Next time, we are going to dive into a marketing strategy, really depth on how to get patients and tie in even some of the elements that Dr. Arthi even spoke about today. I'll see you there.
Bye, Stephen.
Bye-bye. As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to picture yourself a year from now. Are you still in your associateship? Or are you rocking it at your own dental practice, creating beautiful smiles and making a real difference? If that's the dream, it's time to chase it. Before we split, make sure to hit subscribe, drop a review, and give us your rating. It helps us keep bringing you the good stuff that you're into. Until we meet again, keep taking that next step towards your future practice. Here's to investing in your dreams and making them a reality.